This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Paul De Klerk. How are you, Paul?
Hey, I'm good. Very well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. You're, French, Loire Valley. We're going to talk about wine ratings today. But before we do that, let's just find out a little bit about yourself. You work for Cult Wines, which is a wine trading platform, are they these days?
We are the largest wine investment company in the world. So we build portfolios of fine wine for our clients, yes. And we've been doing this for 18 years now.
Yeah, okay. And you're a relationship manager there. What does that mean?
So basically, I manage portfolios for my clients. So I buy and sell wines on their behalf. I also recommend them what to buy and why they should buy it. Yeah, it's a very interesting job. Cool. I have to say. Cool. The wines we deal with are the most expensive wines and the most famous wines in the world. So it's actually a fascinating world.
Yeah, no, it's be good fun. Good fun. One of the things, for the listeners, you did do the level 3 with me. What was it? 2002, I think, or just after COVID.
2022.
22, yes. Yeah, 2022. Just so people know, there is a commercial connection there. I did some tasting with Cult Wines, but I don't think it'll influence us too much because what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about different rating systems and what different people do, but you've got a book coming out. In fact, it's probably out by the time this podcast goes up. And that's when we spoke about it. I thought, well, actually, you've done some research understanding this. Let's have a chat about that. But do you want to tell us a bit about your book first?
Yes, of course. So I decided to create a method that I call the 5 points method to help beginners to understand what to look for in a glass of wine. I've done quite a lot of research and I've tried to understand what the major critics like Robert Parker, like Jane Hansen, and these type of major wine critics use to identify the quality of a wine and also to rate it. And I've tried to simplify it, reduce it to only 5 points, really. 5 simple things for beginners to know what to look for every time they have a glass of wine in their hand. Whatever the region, whatever the price they paid, whatever the color of the wine. If they pay attention to these 5 points, it should help them to understand the quality, but also for them to understand if they like it or not, and if they don't, why, basically. So I wrote a book about this, and it's called How to Appreciate Wine, and it's coming out, on the 8th of September.
2025, if you're listening to it as a back catalogue. Okay, cool. And tell us about the book. Where is it being distributed? Is it?
It's going to be self-published on Amazon. So if you search on Amazon for How to Appreciate Wine, you should be able to find a book.
Okay, cool. Cool. Good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let's talk about different rating systems though, yeah? Because I think that's quite cool. But before we do that, let's just think about a wee bit about what the rating systems are about. Because there's different people have different objectives when they do a rating system. For example, some people... And I think your book is very much about you want to know why you like a wine. Is this wine any good for you? That type of thing. That's very much for the individual. But there's other rating systems like that are more suitable for marketing purposes. You know, when you see sort of the gold medal winning wines, they're really about flogging bottles of wine, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And then you've got judging as well. And different people use different judging techniques as well. And they may or may, there's definitely some overlap between the different spheres, but that's really what people are thinking about when they're doing writing tasting notes, I would have thought, and trying to judge a wine.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a complex world and it's very wide. There are so many different ways to rate wine, really. I've created this 5 points method or I adapted this 5 points method, but there are so many different ways and so many different things to look at in a glass of wine, I think.
The 5 point method you've got, it's not 5 points like in 5 stars or anything like that. It's actually out of 100, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you want to
just
go through the method a little bit?
So you've got, again, the major wine critics, if they try the wines 2 times, they should come up to the same score. If they give that wine 93 out of 100, they should have a 93 points out of 100 a few years later again. So to do this, they use a very strict method where they pay attention to always the same things, really. So again, I've simplified this and I came up with 5 simple things. The first point is the intensity of the nose. The second point is the complexity of the aromas. The third point is the intensity of the palate. The fourth point is the balance of the wine. And the fifth point is the finish of the wine. Mm. So you have these simple 5 points and you try to, well, first pay attention to them, but also to assess them out of 10 points. That will give you your own score out of 50. And if you add a base of 50, then that gives you your own personal score for this wine out of 100.
100 is a very popular method of scoring wines.
It was popularized by Robert Parker in the 80s, 70s. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then the thing is that it's not really about out of 100. People always go, oh, it's always about out of 100. It's not really. It's more like 12 out of from about 88 through to 100, maybe 85 for a really poor wine. And for critics, but your system, I could see you getting a lot of scores in those sort of 80s and...
Yes, absolutely. So, they are terrible wines that you can't get... You start at 50, so it won't be lower than that. But you can have low scores in the 60s or the 70s if you really don't like this wine.
Yeah.
You know, like some wines are completely off balance, for example, and they will get only 1 or 2 points out of 10.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can get any score between 50 and 100.
Whereas a lot of the other systems that you see around the 100-point system is... They're really narrowed in, you know, 88 to 100 is a very common sort of range, in which case you could just go, it's 1-0 to 12. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But the thing is that different critics have different ranges. They may be using a 100-point score, but your score will probably come out lower because the way you're calculating it. Whereas Tim Atkin and James Halliday, who's a 100-point score, they may come up with different scores, and they're quite happy. You know, one might say it's an 87 and one will consistently call it an 84 because they're just calibrating differently and they're doing things slightly differently.
Absolutely. I personally believe between 84 and 86, the difference is minimal. Now, when you start getting above 95, the importance is absolutely huge. It's funny that we're talking about this because on a regular basis, at least once a year with my clients, we do 100 points wine tasting or 100 points dinner sometimes as well, where we try 6 different wines that have been rated 100 points by different critics. I remember very well one wines that was rated 96 points by another critic, 100 points by another. So these 4 points, you would think, it cannot be. It shouldn't be, right? That 4 points is actually a lot at that level. But yeah, wine critics are individuals and they all have their own tasting buds and preferences as well, right? It's very well known.
Yeah, although the more you taste, the less your own preferences tends to drive things because you start being more focused on how it fits within the totality of that region, that section, that style, whatever it is.
Very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. No, that sounds good. So let's talk about some of the different systems. So we talked about the 100 point. Your system is a 100 point system.
Yes.
And we've talked that sometimes different 100 point systems create different scores. It's just the way that people top things up. So when you're comparing a 100 point system from one system to another system, you can't say they got an 88 and they got an 87 or 86. Therefore, an 86 here could be the same as an 87 over there. Do you know what I mean? You do have this sort of weird mapping between different critics. You've got Jancis Robinson's score. What's her score about?
Well, she is famous for scoring out of 20, right? It's a different way to rate, really. She doesn't have a base score, for example, where Robert Parker and my technique is there's a base of 50, but she doesn't. So it's funny because it's actually the way we score kids at school in France out of 20 points. So every French exam you will take or every maths exam you will take will be rated out of 20 points in France. And I don't know if she
the
got...
The people who brought us a decimal and you're going for 20.
I know. It's very funny, but actually that's how it is. I've always been rated out of 20 points my whole childhood.
Yeah.
So I understand it probably much better than the Americans, for example, who rate them out, you know, their system is out of 100. But yeah, it's out of 20.
And there's other systems as well. Like when we talk about things like the IWC or Decanter, they get their judges, I think, to use a 100-point score in the judging, and then they allocate medals after that. Whereas when I've judged at the International Wine Challenge, we are really focused on just, is it, what level medal is it? Is it a recommended, commended, gold, smiley face?
Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We were talking earlier and you were saying that some of the judges there, they don't like to taste blind.
That's very true. Some, actually, the majority of the wine critics refuse to taste completely blind today for the good reason that they would not, it would ruin their credibility if they would give a low score to a very famous wine. Like if they start giving, even on a bad vintage, 85 points to Lafite Rothschild, it would not be taken well at all. There's a fantastic article written last year from Wine Searcher about this. It's about wine critics and why they refuse to rate wines completely blind anymore, which I find incredibly controversial.
As soon as you know anything about the wine, you're influenced by it. And especially when you go to these on-premier tastings in Bordeaux and they're taking you to opulent rooms and you just can't be... The whole idea is to give the impression of opulence and richness and therefore that flows through to the wine. You know, no one's going to do an on-premier tasting out in a shed.
I think the on-premier tasting is the hardest thing to do. I personally don't like young wines anyway, like young Bordeaux. I prefer them at least 10 years old. And so, I was in Bordeaux this year for tasting the on-premier 2024 vintage. And it's so hard. It is so hard to do. Like the wines are too young. They're not even finished.
Yeah.
And they, because I'm not like them, I'm not a wine critic, right? But these wine critics are supposed to give them scores. And these scores are so important. They have so much influence, really. They will decide on the price they're being sold at. Some of these wine critics have so much influence in the wine world. Any 100 points is going to be sold at least for 20-30% more than, you know, a wine that has only 98 or 97 points. Yeah. So it's crazy.
And I can see why under those circumstances that the critic wants to know who the wine is, because the wine at that stage is an embryo of a wine, really, isn't it? And to know that how it's going to turn out, you need to know that that's going to turn into a chicken or whatever it's going to turn. You know, you need to know the path that wine typically takes. And then once you know the path that wine typically takes, you can then assess, okay, this is a good example of that. Therefore, I expect it to be like this. This is a poor example and with a lot more tannins or something like that. So I expect it to be like that. But you know the path or the trajectory that wine will take. Whereas if it's completely blind, you have no insight into that trajectory.
That's true. And the other thing is these wine critics, when they taste these wines en primeur, they also not only give them a score, but they also give them a drinking window.
Yes.
Which I find fascinating because this drinking window is, right, it will change. It will change quite drastically, right? 2013, which is supposed to be a pretty bad vintage for Bordeaux, the wines will only have a drinking window of about 20 years, maximum 25 for the best ones, where actually, you know, 2005, which is an incredible vintage, will have up to 35 or 40 years. But it will change according to the wine. Not all of them. It's not the vintage that has that drinking window. It's actually the wine itself. So they have to score the wine and give it a drinking window. I find this exercise incredibly difficult. And I really respect these wine critics for that, really. Mm. It's a true job.
No, well, I don't know if it's a job. Well, they may take all of the job. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people volunteering to do that job.
That's true, actually. That's true.
Have you guys seen inflation in the scores over time? Because you're looking at these scores a lot, aren't you?
Yes. Scores are incredibly important for us. We need to assess the value of the wine. And some of the data we use is obviously the actual price of the vintage, but also it scored this average score from different critics. So, critic scores are incredibly important for us. It's a very good question. The answer is I don't know, but I also believe that wine in general, especially in France and in Italy, the whole industry is driving towards quality in the last 15-20 years, where most of the wines produced in France are actually were produced in the past for mass consumption. They were low quality wines, and they're trying to feed the AOC, the appellation, in order to, but they will be producing as much as possible to get, you know, as much revenue as possible. But the wines were not fantastic. Where the amount of producers today that are actually targeting quality is increasing, and it's quite a lot, which is fantastic, right? For us that are wine lovers, are the wine critics actually give better ratings than they used to, or better scores, or is it because the wines are getting better? Obviously, global warming is at play as well, right? It's easier to be making good wines when there's less rain. So it all these come into play. I would say, yes, the scores are probably increasing, but it's not necessarily because the wine critics are more generous. There might be other factors at play.
Yeah. I know 20, 30 years ago, viticulture changes were making huge inroads into the quality of the wine. And recent year in Bordeaux, there's a new technique for breaking up caps that I'd never heard of, and it explodes or something. I can't remember. I was reading about it. It was quite unusual, but there's new techniques coming in, and the more tools you've got, the more likely you are to come out with a better outcome.
Technology is definitely a game changer in winemaking today. Absolutely.
You would expect something like wine to progressively get better and better and better. And if you think about wine over the last 50 years, it's just leaps and bounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go back to your tasting method. When I looked at it, and went, okay, it's out of 100. But really, the key components you're assessing are really the key components that we teach at level three. You know, it's like in level three, we call it BLIC, which is balance, length, intensity, and complexity. And you've broken out your intensity into intensity on the nose and intensity on the palate.
Absolutely.
Intensity becomes a very important scoring factor with you in your system. And obviously, BLIC, we do it out of four.
Yes. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Instead of 5 for me. Yeah.
But also yours is out of 100 eventually. Yes. You know, for us, it's either got complexity or it hasn't got complexity. It's very binary. Whereas with you, it's very much, it's a sliding graduation.
I find it easier, especially for beginners, to rate wines out of 10 rather than give them, for example, a score out of 4, or even to, when we talk about the acidity, you know, to be medium high or low or these type of things. I find it easier to give it a score out of 10, which is why I made it that way, really.
Don't you find, though, that often people land up in mediumitis? Where they go, that's about 5, or it's not slightly better, I'll give it a 6 or a 4 or something like that, rather than go for the big numbers. Do you find it's hard to, with this methodology, do you think it's hard to get 100 points? If you look at something like Vivino, it's very hard to get a high score in Vivino because it clusters, everything clusters around 4.
I agree. I've got nothing against Vivino. I don't trust the numbers I see on Vivino, really. The main reason behind this is because I think it gives too much credit to people who don't necessarily know much about wine. And also, you can have a wine that is worth thousands of pounds, and that literally is a delicious wine, and that is worth so much for a good reason, that has a 4.5, you know, score, yeah, which would be terrible. And something that is worth 10 pounds that has a 4.9 or something like that. That's why I like the wine critics and their scores, is because they are professionals, and I think they have more merit. Their judgment is worth more. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, and also on places like Vivino, people are saying whether they like the wine or not. Whereas if you're a critic or a judge, your personal preferences aren't really important about the score. So you're getting a more neutral approach to it. Whereas sometimes you get these Marmite wines. Hunter Valley Semillon, big chunk of people won't like it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then you'll get a small group who really are passionate about it. And that's fabulous. That's all you need to do to sell it, right? That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But they're never going to get a good score, even if the wines are very good. Whereas sometimes those wines often rate very highly in competitions.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to create in the book. I'm trying to help people to understand what to look for, but also why they like a wine and why they don't like it. Because the idea actually came from my father originally. My father has drunk quite a lot of wine in his life. And he is his late 60s. He is French and in his late 60s. You can imagine the amount of liters he's drunk in his life. Now, if you ask him today if he likes this glass of wine, he's going to tell you yes or no, but he won't be able to tell you why. Mm. And this is what I'm trying to tackle with this book and with this 5 points method is to help people to understand what they like in a glass of wine, really.
Mm. It's interesting. Your number six, even though it's not part of the 5 point, is tannins. And tannins, there's a big chunk of the population who have a visceral dislike to tannins.
Mm.
And that's one of the key components that some people go, I like this wine or I don't like this wine. And it's the texture, it's the tannins, you know, the structure of the tannins can create things that people just don't like.
That's true. I try to make a very strong difference between the two major components in a wine, which is the flavors and the aromas, what you actually taste, and the texture.
Mm.
And obviously the tannins are part of the texture, but same as the acidity, the
balance,
the balance itself, etc. So, but yeah, tannins are very important and they can be aggressive, they can be harsh, or they can actually be smooth and delicious.
Talky and
yeah.
I mean, we, in the old days, years ago for level three, we used to have to describe the tannins. So you get them, you had to give a ranking of the intensity of the tannins and then you had to describe the tannins. That was quite good fun. That made you really think about the tannins.
This is why, I don't know, if you can see here, I actually, you have to assess the quality, the quantity of the tannins, and then you have some vocabulary for you to circle on the tasting sheet. So it gives you some example, right, of what tannins can be described as. So for example, velvety, smooth, crunchy, chalky. That should Lush. Help you. Yes, absolutely, yeah.
I think that's quite a handy thing because when people understand that they're sensitive to bitterness or whatever it is and they zoom in on that, all of a sudden they can just go, okay, I like these styles, and then you're away and smiling. And what almost invariably happens is if you drink tannic wines, even if they're mildly tannic, you get used to it after a while anyway, nature nurture, and you get through it.
Absolutely. And yeah, tannins are a big part of wine composition anyway. You know, winemakers spent a lot of time trying to polish the tannins and make them perfect.
Before we finish up, Paul, you're from the Loire?
Yes.
Favorite unusual wine region in the Loire?
One of my favorite wines is the Savennières.
Yeah.
The Savennières, which is just outside of Angers, really. Where I'm from, it's about 20 minutes drive from my house. They make this delicious white wine that is very crispy and I love Savennières, and I encourage everyone who hasn't tried a Savennières before to try them.
Okay. And the grape variety is Chenin Blanc?
It's Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc. The most flexible grape you can think of, really, because you can make very, very dry wines from Chenin Blanc, or you can make very sweet wines from Chenin Blanc and the Botrytis.
Yeah, yeah. I always think Côte de Lyon is your sweet ones, and Savennières.
Yeah.
I always think that they're a dry wine, and they tend to be quite gutsy because they get a little bit of late harvest.
They can.
But they're dry.
They're dry.
And they give you the alcohol, but you still got, because it's cold, you get the acidity in there as well.
And I tried recently a 22-year-old Savennières.
Oh.
And it was delicious. I think it was really time to drink.
Yeah.
But it got some additional tertiary flavors that not many regions in the world are able to produce age-worthy dry white wines, really.
Yeah.
And yes, some Savennières can do. Yeah.
All right then, Paul. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Cheers. And the book's, the book's coming out on the...
On the 8th of September, 2025.
8th of September, 2025. And it's called...
How to Appreciate Wine.
How to Appreciate Wine. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.